Today on the Inland Journal podcast, we talk with retiring Avista CEO Scott Morris. In October, Morris will hand over the top job in the company to Avista President Dennis Vermillion, and then Morris will become the non-executive chairman of Avista's board until next March, and then he'll leave the company. Scott Morris is an Avista lifer. He joined the company in 1981. He started in Spokane, moved his way up the company ladder, taking jobs in Lewiston and in Medford, Oregon. In 2000, the company named him president of Avista Utilities. 2 years later, he was promoted to senior vice president of Avista Corporation. And then he was named president and chief operating officer in 2006, and finally chief executive officer and chairman of the board in 2008. Along the way, Morris has been involved in a variety of community projects, from chairing the Board of Trustees at Gonzaga University to being involved in the growth of medical education in Spokane. Scott Morris joins us on the phone. So how long have you been thinking about retiring?
Well, you know, anytime you're, I'm 61 and a half years old, but on the other hand, I love what I do. This is such an honor to work here. It's such a great company. And I've had the opportunity to be mentored by some of the great leaders of our community. I mean, I started here when Wendell Satre was the CEO and worked under Wendell, of course, then with Paul Redmond, working side by side with Gary Ely, three great leaders. And now I've had a chance to do this as long as I have. So on the one hand, Doug, if I had my druthers, I never would want to leave. But on the other hand, at this point in my life and with Dennis Vermillion just so ready to lead this company, it just felt like it was the right time.
So a lot of leaders talk about leaving their companies or whatever they're leading in better shape than when they began. So how are you leaving Avista in better shape than when you started as CEO?
Well, there are three or four things that I'm really, really proud of. And you know, first and foremost, is the things that we've done serving our customers. We've worked really hard with making sure that the basics of our company, the hydro system, the transmission system, was aging when I got here, and we had to rebuild it. And now our hydro facilities are going to be great for our customers for another 50 years, be able to provide low-cost energy, green energy in this time of climate change. And our company, it continues to be one of the greenest utilities in North America. So that's number one. I've really worked hard, you know, doing what I could do for the community. Having Paul Redmond and Wendell and Gary as my mentors, being a focused on things like being able to work with the community on building out the university district. When I got here, there was only the Surdy building on that site. And we first had to transform the U district and actually get things built there before we can even get a medical school. And then to be able to work with the community to get two medical schools. The work that we've done creating the Avista Foundation, I'm really proud of the fact that we have a lasting foundation now. We didn't have one. And being able to create that and be its first chair of that foundation, I'm so proud about that. And being able to open up the Lower Falls with Huntington Park, you know, generations of people in Spokane never saw those falls, and now generations to come can go ahead and experience the falls in a way that I didn't get to experience them as a kid growing up here. So that, and then finally, I think our culture. We've always had a great culture at Avista Washington Water Power. We've continued to work hard on having this be a people-first environment. All the things that we've done here has been done because we have great people, and to be able to work with our employees and help them be the very best that they can be and put the people that work here in a position to be successful and have a culture where that is celebrated is something that I'm very proud of.
So you mentioned a little bit earlier about that green energy transition. Can you talk about the transition within the company to say, gee, can we afford to continue to, you know, invest more in solar or invest more in wind?
You know, Doug, what it goes back to for me is when Initiative 937 passed, when 15% of our generation had to be renewable by 2020, and hydro didn't count. But you know what? Kettle Falls didn't count either. And at the time, we were looking at that, and Kettle was the first, as you know, wood-fired generation facility, biomass facility, built in the United States. We had the very first one built in 1983, and it's green energy. And it was not seen as that in that initiative. It took us three or four tries in the legislature to get the law amended so that Kettle Falls was recognized. And I think that's the only time they've actually amended 937, one of the only times. And I'm proud of that because by us amending and getting Kettle Falls viewed as green energy, it saved our customers, Doug, tens of millions of dollars because that plant was green and it let us be able to go attack the marketplace in a way that put us in a position where we could get the very best deal we could for our green energy. So by not feeling that we had to go out and get a green resource to meet a deadline, but we were able to get a green resource because it was the best thing for our customers, that's why the two green wind projects that we've been able to put online, both the Palouse Falls one and the one we just announced in Lynn, both of them were the cheapest wind prices at the time of any utility really going out and getting wind. So between that and then our ability to do the solar arrays, both in Lynn and the one here in our community, I guess what I would just tell you, it's a broad strategy, and it's a way for us to be able to think through both green and affordability, and that's been really what we've talked about here. We weren't going to just jump in the market to go get a wind resource. We were going to jump in the market to get a wind resource when it was the very best price that we could deliver it for our customers, and we've done that. So for me, that's what I'm really proud of, that you meld that. And plus, they're in our service territory, because I'm going to get wonky with you for a minute, Doug, but the wind, if it would have been outside our service territory, we would have had to pay extra transmission charges. We would not have been able to use our hydro to help balance the wind when the wind wasn't blowing. So we even saved lots of money by having it be here in our home community. But again, that's all a strategy that we intentionally did, working with the great minds that we have that work our power supply, and we executed on what we wanted to do. It wasn't luck. It was focus, and it was how we wanted to do it. So that's what I'm really proud of. So we are so well positioned for the future that as climate change happens, as and how we want to try to address that, and when, you know, Governor Inslee's 100% clean by 2045, we know we can meet that because of what we've done, not just in the last few years, Doug, but this has been something we've been working on for decades. So these kind of initiatives don't worry us. As a matter of fact, we get energized by them, pardon the pun.
So one of the reasons for working on the Hydro One acquisition was so you felt that you could steer Avista's future, that you felt that perhaps you would wind up combining with another company, but you wanted to be able to steer that as much as possible. Now that that has gone by the wayside, are you still worried about that being able to, or do you think that Avista is positioned right now that it can go on its own for, 15, 20 years as a standalone company?
Well, absolutely, Doug. We are so focused and excited about our future. And, I mentioned at the time, Hydro One was a remarkable opportunity that we could control our own destiny, but it also gave huge benefits to the community, to our employees, to our customers. But it didn't happen. But the things that we're doing today were exactly the things that we were going to be doing if it was part of Hydro One or not. And we are so well positioned for the future. You know, we had our annual meeting last week on Thursday. And when I made my remarks, one of the things I said to our shareholders was that we are really at a time because of where the industry is going from a technology perspective, from a green energy perspective, the fact that generation is getting more inexpensive, to the innovations happening in it. We're not at a time of evolution. This is really the beginning of an energy revolution. And because of what we have done, not just for the past few years, but for the decades leading up to this, we, Avista, your hometown utility, is positioned to not just be a part of that revolution, we're going to lead in that revolution, Doug, and that's how we're positioned. As I walk out this door, I couldn't be more proud. We have, you know, over 50% of our generation is green. We've brought on more wind. We have the largest solar array in the state of Washington. We are putting in not just smart meters, but the best smart meters made to date in the world by Itron that'll be able to help us come up with non-generation solutions about how we can better serve our customers from an energy efficiency perspective. There are so many things that Avista, your hometown utility, is going to lead in this revolution. As I walk out the door and just get to be on our board, I'm really excited to still be a part of it. Man, there are so many good things that are going to come down the road for our customers and our community because of this company. And I'm so excited to be still, at least to be a part of it on the board.
We're talking with Scott Morris, Avista's CEO, who has announced his retirement. So if you can go back maybe to your time as CEO, just pick one rocky area where your company was going through some bumps. How'd you get your company through them? Is there one that sort of sticks out for you?
Well, there's two or three. I mean, when I first came here, and, you know, one of the things that was really challenging is, you know, when we had the transition, a couple of things. When Tom Matthews left the company, and Tom, you know, left, and he left right when the energy crisis started, our company was really in a tough place where energy prices in the marketplace were the highest by, you know, hundreds and hundreds of percent. Our company was on the brink of bankruptcy. The morale was pretty low, given of when you go through any kind of a huge transition. And you know what really, the reason why we got through it was the power of the people that work here. And you hear people say that all the time, but it's really true about this place. I was really lucky that I started here as a kid right out of college, and you know, I was in my 19th year. I started in 1981. I came back in 2000. I'm in the middle of this crisis, and what was incredible for me is I had worked with so many people still in the company. I could walk through the halls of this company, and I could talk to people, and we all knew that we were going to get through it. And you have this relationship with people you work with. And what has always been important to me is that the people I worked with in the executive suite, or the people when I had the honor to work with them in the call center, or the people that I was honored to work with when I worked in the line office and operations, or when I worked in Lewiston or Medford, our people are so talented, Doug. I never, ever doubted that we wouldn't get through that. And it wasn't because of me, it was because of them. I just have so much faith in the people that work here, and it's proven itself time and again. You're not a 130-year-old company if you don't have great people. So I think the energy crisis was one, a rocky time. The Great Recession was really a rough time. We had some tough times when we had to divest from a lot of the subsidiaries that were started in the 90s that failed, and we had to figure out a way to keep the good ones and have to divest from the ones that weren't successful. Had to make a lot of tough choices. And then finally, I think, Doug, you know, one of the things that happened here is we've always kept our values. We've always done things, no matter the tough things that have happened, or the good things that have happened. It's a company based on values and trust and integrity. And that's always been top of mind as we've made all our decisions, that that never compromise those, and good things will happen.
So let's finish with this. How do you do a transition like this where the president, the CEO of the company steps down and he's going to stay on for a little while, stay on the board? How do you make a transition so the next guy can come in and kind of put his own footprint in the company?
Well, you know, I'm lucky that Dennis has been here for 33 years. He started here right out of WSU in 1985 as a young electrical engineer. Dennis went and led our company's Avista Energy subsidiary. And honestly, when the company almost went bankrupt, the reason why we didn't go bankrupt was because of Dennis's leadership at Avista Energy and the work that that team did in order to help, you know, have a profitable energy business that really helped supplement at that point the utility, quite frankly. And then Dennis has been in the role as the president of the utility, and he and I have worked together for a decade now. He started in 2009. So we have an incredibly close relationship. I have the utmost respect for Dennis. And Dennis and I just had this conversation, Doug. We were sitting here last week, and I looked at Dennis, and I said, you know, Dennis, how lucky am I that I've had my run, and now how lucky am I that my focus gets to be to do whatever I can do to help you have a great run. I mean, that's what I'm here to do. So when I'm on the board, my responsibility is how can I help you be successful? So I get to work with somebody who I respect. He's my friend. And I just want the very best for him and, frankly, for our employees. So this has never been about me anyway. So what I'm excited about is just to be able to help in any way I can. And I love the company. I love the people. I respect Dennis. And I'm going to just be here to help. And, you know, he's going to take the helm and he's going to steer the ship and he's going to be awesome. And I'm just honored that I can at least still be on the boat a little bit, helping him if he needs it.
Scott, were there anything that I didn't ask you about that you wanted to make sure that people heard about before we finish?
You know, I guess the last thing I would just say, Doug, is as we, I think the community is going to be so inspired by the Catalyst building. Our ability to build not just any old building on the South Landing, but this building is a building that is unlike any in the world. And I would really encourage you to talk to Dean Allen at McKinstry, our partner. A cross-laminated timber building, it'll be the largest in the Pacific Northwest. It'll be the most sustainable building in the Pacific Northwest. It's going to be the smartest building and sustainable building, not just the Pacific Northwest, but probably in North America. We're building an electric grid called an eco district of unlike any that's built right now in the United States. And this building is really going to be a showcase. And Doug, we're doing it without a nickel of subsidy. No government subsidy. Usually when these kind of buildings are built, you need some help because you can't make them cost effective. You can't get them cheap enough that anybody would pay the rent. And we've done that because of working with Katerra and because of the design. So this building is, people are going to come from all over the world and they're going to want to see how we did it. And it's exciting for Spokane. And the fact that Eastern's going to move all of their STEM, pretty much their STEM courses from Cheney to downtown Spokane. We're going to create a public-private research opportunity with Avista, McKinstry, and ITRON, where these students are going to be able to do research with our best and brightest engineers in a way that probably hasn't been done that I know of in the Northwest. So it's really the next legacy of the University District, building out the South District and really building a STEM network to complement the biomedical network that's already there. So if there's anything that I'm kind of envious that I or wish I could would stay, it would be to kind of continue to help drive that. And one of the things that I'm going to do, even though I'm retired, is I'm going to stay really engaged in all of that because it's important for Spokane. And we are going to make that South Landing as dynamic as the North Bank is right now. And we're going to make this, and we're going to make our U district as dynamic as South Lake Union in Seattle. And that's a vision that we need to do, and I'm going to continue to work on that even after I retire.
Scott Morris is the CEO and chairman of Avista. He's retiring and leaving his post in October. He will continue to chair the company's board until March. Thank you for joining us for this Inland Journal podcast. Next time, we'll talk about issues related to HIV as the Washington State HIV Conference comes to Spokane this week for the first time. To find and subscribe to the Inland Journal podcast, search for Inland Journal in iTunes and NPR One or Google Play, or find the program on the Inland Journal page at SpokanePublicRadio.org. You can send your comments and story ideas to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. I'm happy that you have joined us. We thank you for listening. I'm Doug Nadvornik.